The murder of two police officers by an individual involved in the sovereign citizenship movement has highlighted the darker, violent potential of conspiracy theories. Stephen Hill asked online extremism specialist Dr. Kaz Ross of the University of Tasmania to provide an overview of the sovereign citizen movement and the threat it can pose to human safety and to the working of institutions.
So the sovereign citizen movement, it's kind of an oxymoron, actually, because they themselves don't use the term sovereign citizen. They call themselves sovereigns. But this particular movement started a few decades ago in America, and we've had it here in various forms in Australia for quite some time. And generally, people believe that the current legal system is not legitimate. They believe that the Constitution is not legitimate and the flag is not legitimate. This doesn't mean that they believe in complete lawlessness. They think that there is a body of law. They call it common law. It's not what we understand as common law. But they think there's a body of law called common law that we should be going back to, that the Australian Constitution was changed illegally, that the real Australian flag is the red flag, the red ensign, rather than the blue flag, and that we need to sack the government. So it's a movement that's been around for quite a few years. In Australia, it's popped up in various places. People might know about micro-territories. There was the Kingdom of Hutt in Western Australia. Sovereign citizens have popped up into the media a few times, usually when they've disputed paying rates or taxes or fees or fines or something like that. And unfortunately, they end up in a lot of trouble with houses and businesses, cars being repossessed, having to go to jail and that kind of thing.
We saw another violent incident from a sovereign citizen. In the US, the movement has been designated a domestic terrorist group. Can you tell us how dangerous can sovereign citizen supporters become?
The sovereign citizens, or more accurately, we could call them pseudo-law litigants, can become dangerous in a number of ways. In a very mundane way, they're dangerous because they clog up the courts. So they turn up at the magistrate's court, they've got pages and pages of documents, they make a lot of pseudo-law arguments which make no sense, and in the end they always lose. But it takes up hundreds of hours of courts all around Australia are facing this problem. So in that way, they're clogging up our legal system. Referring to the potential for violence, they themselves would say that they're not violent. However, if you look at some of the sovereign citizen groups, and they might form what they call a citizens assembly or a common law assembly. Now, some of these are very, very well organised. They hold court themselves according to their law. So it may surprise you to find that Scott Morrison has been tried for treason in one of these courts. They go to police stations and they serve warrants on the police to say you must issue a warrant for Scott Morrison or Dan Andrews or whoever their target is. Now, they themselves say that they have no power to enforce these orders. However, this is where the danger comes in, because these groups themselves are running around dressed in sheriff's uniforms. So it's a pretty short step from that to someone in that movement going, right, I've had it, the police aren't doing anything, I'll take it on myself and I'm going to hang Dan Andrews or whoever the politician is that they're targeting. So there's that danger. And then there's those that are not in organised groups, but they're in communities of fellow believers. Those people can be very isolated. And of course, the belief of sovereign citizens is that our laws don't apply to them. So they constantly end up running up against the police and running up against the legal system. And the incident that we saw this week, that chap was in court for about 20 times when he was trying to resolve a particular legal issue. So they get very frustrated. They feel very targeted by police because police are always stopping them. Their cars are unregistered. They're unlicensed drivers, so they shouldn't be on the roads. They don't recognise the authority of the police.
Much of the internet, in particular social media, in the way that it structures information, and it's much more sort of personalised information delivery to maybe how we received information previously. Has this led into an increased reception of conspiracy theories?
Yeah, 100%. Most of these conspiracy theories, you wouldn't even hear about them if you weren't on the internet. And unfortunately, during COVID, people had a lot of time on their hands to go down those conspiracy rabbit holes. So we see two things about the internet. The first is groups of people can form communities and they would never have met those people before. That's the thing about this so-called freedom movement online, is they're very accepting of some pretty way out beliefs. So you can come along with any kind of belief about aliens or lizard people or Dan Andrews keeping children in towers under the streets of Melbourne, and you'll find other people who say, yeah, that sounds right. Yep, I believe you.
According to Dr. Kaz Rost, another dark effect of online silos is the way in which the white supremacist movement has been able to use the anxieties about COVID restrictions and other pseudo-legal beliefs to recruit individuals into the white nationalist movement.
Do you know about the August 31 March anti-migration? Yeah. And that's a really good example where, in actual fact, it's started by neo-Nazis, but they've convinced the freedom movement into thinking that they started it. So the freedom movement or the front people believe that it's a grassroots movement and it's not white supremacist, but the behind the scenes are actually white supremacists. Basically, the neo-Nazi movement in Australia say that 50% of their recruits come from the freedom movement. They see them as something to be shepherded in towards them and to radicalise them and get them saying Hitler wasn't such a bad bloke. And unfortunately, after 5 years, they're succeeding.
Dr. Kaz Ross from the University of Tasmania, speaking there with Stephen Hill.